Yeah.
Okay.
Let's keep going. My notes aren't loading.
Your notes
My notes aren't loading because the signal's so bad, so.
What? Why are you staring at me?
SpecFicMedia.com presents Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones podcast with hosts E.G. Holyfield, Christiana Ellis, Chooch, Viv, and Nuchus.
Hey, and welcome to our first live Beyond the Wall podcast here at lovely Hunt Valley Marriott, Hunt Valley, Maryland. Holyfield, and this is Christiana.
Hi, everybody.
Woo! Chooch and Viv, and today we are going to be talking about...
And Rory.
And Rory. Of course, can't forget Rory. She's mentioned at least once on every podcast episode, so... what we're going to be doing today is talking about episode 8 of season 2, which was on last Sunday.
Yes.
And as anybody's listening to our podcast, it's usually 2 hours, so we're just going to speed through it and probably
finish it later,
more.
I think.
Record a little more later tonight.
I doubt we'll tomorrow. Cover everything we want to cover with this episode.
Probably get through about a quarter of the episode.
Well, I think we want to leave some time for questions, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Depending on, questions.
Basically, we're just going to see what happens.
Yeah.
So, let's get right into it. Season 2, Episode 8. What's the name of that episode there, Nutty?
Prince of Winterfell.
For those of you who don't know, Nutty is our expert of Westeros. Will you quit doing that? I know, I need to talk into the microphone. Oops,
or louder.
Yeah, talk louder, right? So, the Prince of Winterfell. And it starts out in Winterfell, and this is where we learn that Theon stands alone against the North. Yarasha can ride circles around him, figuratively and literally. So, Christiana, would you like to start us off?
I really liked this episode just because from the books, Theon's sister is named Asha rather than Yara, so thus Yarasha. But I felt like this was the first episode that I really got a hint of the Asha that I liked from the books, just because in the show so far, although I haven't disliked the portrayal per se, they haven't really shown her do anything, and so she's mostly just... been giving Theon snarky comments, but this one I think was the first scene we've seen her reveal a little bit more depth where, you know, once she kind of sent the others away, she was really basically just saying, listen, I know where you're coming from here, but this is not going to work. Don't die here. And I liked that.
That was one of my big movie cliche things that bug me is circling the horse around with the meaningful glare.
That was a little dragged out and a bit ridiculous.
But it established her as the alpha. I think it was like an animal alpha thing. She's the one that is considered to be the heir, and she's just marking territory.
I think she's just
marking territory.
That Theon actually did something good, and her being the heir might be in question.
Yeah, plus, I think
good.
They always do those reestablishing shots.
Yeah.
Or reestablishing character in the shows where they, you know, show something you've seen over
maybe
and over
good.
Again. once they go into the hall, Yara pretty much gives him a hard time and shoots him down for everything that he feels is his accomplishments.
Again.
And, of course, she had, you know... the good comebacks of...
You're a great warrior. I saw the bodies above your gates. Which one gave you the tougher fight, the cripple or the six-year-old?
She's awesome.
And she also uses a word that we hear several times on this episode.
Okay, wait. A little backstory. We watched the episode again at 4, so we could all together take notes again. We'd all only seen it once. And we decided to... You've heard of the Game of Thrones drinking game. So we did that, and that was fun.
The panelists are here.
It was not the perfect episode for that. It wasn't, you know, one of the ones that the rules were tailored for.
Right.
But we still found plenty of opportunity.
And, right. And made up some rules some on the fly, as in dropping the C word. That became something.
You made me a promise.
Your little boy prisoners made you a promise, and you got mad when they broke it. You're the dumbest cunt alive.
Call me a
cunt. A dumb cunt who killed the only two Starks in Winterfell.
And there's four or five more after.
Yeah. We didn't know it was going to be.
Audio.
Yeah, well. Oh, yeah, this is not safe for work. Sorry.
Or children.
Yeah. I want to add to something that Christiana said about that scene, because I agree, Yara. I have to say it the way they say it on the show. It's hard, but I am so in love with her portrayal now. And what you were talking about, the circling of the horse with the the glare. I actually, again, alpha female, kind of the alpha of the situation. But I found her whole performance and that whole piece with her was just so utterly compelling that I think that she is. That's that scene with Theon. I think is like Emmy worthy. I mean, I got goosebumps watching it again. And I know, nutty.
I see some gritted teeth.
But let me tell you one more thing. My whole thing with Theon in that scene is it brought to mind a phrase that our housemate says, which is sandy vagina. Theon was a sandy vagina, and he just needed to poop out a pearl.
Poop out a what?
Pearl.
Poop out a pearl.
All bad mental
sandy
images.
Vagina.
All bad.
Starting to sound like a Dr. John Smart.
I learned those are dangerous to go to.
Yes, they are. As you were saying, at the end of the scene, there's, you know, really good exchange between the two of them, and you know, you get a lot more of her character just from that, you know, 30 seconds than you do for everything before that. So
I think you had a difference of opinion,
Yara. I'm still not sold on Yara because I'm missing a lot of the Asha qualities, the charisma, the she's awesome.
The catching of an axe.
Yeah, yeah. But I will say, my reaction is tame in comparison to my husband, Tech, who has gone on rants and
yes,
rants.
Yes, we heard it last night.
And rants.
Last night.
And I totally support his opinion as I support Christiana's opinion, which is great because we all can all take something else away from this. But
yes.
Yeah, I'm missing the Osha in that Yara.
Well, I think part of what I liked this time was not so much that she's as I imagined from the books, but this is a step in that direction beyond what they had shown so far. So I approve of that.
Agree.
I still feel like I want to see her do something, not just say things.
Well, she needs to throw an axe.
One of the big criticisms of the show, and that we've, you know, said many a time, is that they like to not show things sometimes. You know, whether it's battles or, you know, some of the character stuff, they...
Dogs, dragons, horses,
battles.
Yeah.
So let's move on to the next scene.
Boars?
Boards.
Boards.
Where we discover that Skeletor ended up in Westeros. And that the red shirts from the Night's Watch are on Jon Snow's head.
His shirt actually did rattle. I appreciated that. Those who haven't read the books, the Lord of Bones is also sometimes known as Rattle Shirt. And, you know,
it's self-explanatory.
I thought it was a good look.
Yeah.
The costume. You know?
We didn't watch it with closed captioning on this time. Did anybody catch if they actually gave his name on the closed captioning?
Ygritte called him Lord of Bones.
Gotcha.
Right.
Thank you.
His helm was awesome.
Yeah. Gruesome.
The bones, by the way, are from people he killed.
It's like the call.
Yes.
They don't cut their brain.
Yeah. For him,
he
has a bone for every
takes a little
kill.
Bone.
Well, but it's like, it's not even just a wildling thing. It's more of just like it's a rattle shirt thing.
Yeah.
That's just his deal.
So what was the head on the staff thing he was carrying?
I don't know. It was a deer or something.
I think he killed a mouse or something. I don't know.
Like a rat.
It was his first kill. You know, he's 3 months old. He's very proud.
He's very proud.
He started building it for dogs he was killing in the backyard.
Well, and you wanted maybe like the sharp snout on it so he can like wrap people on the head with it.
And then he has the great line of...
He runs. I'll chop his balls off.
He runs. I'll do it myself.
So you get a little more of a you greet, and you know she says that we're even to John, because, you know, saved her or didn't kill her, so...
He's only saved because he is Ned Stark's son, and so there's discussion of Mance Rayder still not appearing off on screen, mm-hmm. but referenced, certainly, implication that he would be interested in meeting Ned Stark's son.
Even if he's a bastard.
Yeah. Well, and then also we just saw the, you know, sad news that the Half-Hand was captured as well.
Yeah.
Because he had to divert from his original plan to look for John.
Yeah, so we had, you know, again, John not being able to follow orders. And but this time he actually pays for it with the lives of three people.
Well, this does just remind me, though, one of the things that I've liked so much about the Ygritte scenes is that for all the crap that we give Jon Snow, I'm there too, but I really like him as a character, but he does need to grow. He is still young and inexperienced, and so Ygritte is the sort of challenge that he needs for the next step of his development, mm-hmm. and so I love that about it. But just the fact that she's always teasing him and he doesn't know what to do, it's, well, I'm not criticizing his character. It's more like I'm recognizing it's like this is the challenge he needs for the next stage of his development. Mm-hmm.
What did you think?
Yeah, how she completely disarms him with every other word. And
yeah, he's just dumbfounded by her.
Yeah, he doesn't know her.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Yeah, one of the recurring themes in Game of Thrones is that, you know, your heroes have flaws, you know, it's sort of whatever, Greek tragedy, where, you know, the good characters, the ones you're rooting for, have some sort of flaw that you know, at least cause them problems, if not undo them in the end. And, you know, you've got, you know, Tyrion, who has the drinking and the whoring. You've got, you know, Jon with his, you know, it's either that they're young, so they're acting like they should as teenagers, and or... You know, they have real flaws that get them into trouble. So, move on to the next scene, which is where we are reminded that Robb Stark is marrying because of a bridge, and that fear.
Hope it's got a nice view.
And that fear is what allows for bravery.
That is what Ned said to Bran. And when I first watched it, I said, "He didn't say that to you. He said that to Bran." And then Jack said, "I bet it's a favorite speech of his."
That's what I was thinking, is that it's...
You got
it's,
a couple of sons.
You know, my dad had some stories that he would tell over and over and over again. That sounds like the sort of... That would be one of Ned Stark's old standbys, is anytime anyone's afraid, it's like, well, you know, that's the only time you can be brave.
Yeah.
I do like, though, even though it's... Well, I mean, it would definitely have to play differently than it did in the book, all this stuff with Rob and Talissa, just because in the book we really didn't even get any scenes from his POV, so all of this stuff was off camera, so to speak. Yeah. But I like that they're showing us more of that, just because obviously, you know, what he finally does in this episode to break his vow is, I mean, that's important. So it's like... Mm-hmm. It's an important decision that it's nice to see the build-up for that rather than just hearing after the fact, like, oh, yeah, Rob decided he was going to...
But, Mother, she comforted me.
Jeez.
I think it's interesting they're spending so much time on that, given that it was something that wasn't in the books at all.
It is. It's a neat perspective. Because they're just kind of like, what? When it happens in the book. The way stuff happens in the book.
Yeah. And they have some great conversations.
Yes. Well, this episode's full of...
That's not what you were excited about in this episode. You were excited about the conversation later.
But their lovely little scene and conversation has to come to an end because the writers come up and say that... we learned that Catelyn has betrayed Rob and his bannermen. And our arguments crumble when put to the test. So, you know, the first thing I thought of when she was talking to Rob was, you know, however many episodes ago, she makes that promise to Brienne when they're, you know, doing their oaths, making their oaths to each other, and she says that she's never going to do anything to make her go against her honor. And, you know, her taking Jaime like that, even though she is her protector, you know, following that order, would seem like that would be going against the oaths that they made to each other.
It's her kids. She's got one being held captive in the castle. One, I don't even know where we are in the story with where the hell Arya is as far as what's known. And she's got one kid that's been crippled. And she's, I mean, I'm sorry. I would flip them bitches out. Right. I'd get
and
my
I
babies
think for
if
Brienne,
I could.
She's
had to
say
no. Who
does she care if the Lannisters do this
right.
or the Starks do that? She's serving Caitlyn.
She's serving,
so,
yeah.
Well, there's no moral quandary for her. She's not disgracing herself.
I agree with that. I think my disagreement is with whether or not what Kat did was, like, bad. Maybe it was bad because
what she did was bad.
What she did was bad, but I don't think that it's inexcusable. I would fucking do it.
And I think that
and I just throw her in jail. Just
your
like,
kids.
One of the another thing that's slightly different in the way that played out, even just in addition that it's kind of taking place in a slightly different chronology, but in the book, part of her motivation is that the news of the two burned bodies at Winterfell had made its way down there, and so she thought Bran and Rickon were dead, and that was another part of it. So it was like, she thought Rob was her only son left, and then so that all the more reason to just go with the girls. But the thing that the show added that I thought was actually really made it a little more complex is that this idea that the Karstarks, in revenge for the son that Jaime strangled with the chain, might have just killed Jaime in his cell. And so if they did that, then not only would they not have Jaime as a bargaining chip with the Lannisters, but the Lannisters might even say, that's what you do to our captive? What are we going to do to your captive?
Mm.
And so I think in that context, if she felt she was going to be unable to prevent the Karstarks from killing Jaime, she did what she had to do. And so that, obviously, it's a complex situation because there's also lots of uncertainty about it, because she has no way of knowing if Jaime's going to keep his word remotely. What if he just gets killed out there in the middle of the wilderness, and then what? And so lots of potential problems, mm-hmm. but I liked that addition of why she had to do it right then. She couldn't wait for Rob to come back and discuss it.
Yeah, I definitely would have led with that when Rob starts asking her questions.
Yeah.
She's like, but the children.
I was shouting that at the screen.
Okay, okay. I will grant that, yes.
Well, as a family, they tend to bury the lead, because it reminds me of when she shows up to Rob's camp, and he does, and they have this cute little scene where she observes him flirting with Talissa, and they have a laugh about that, and I'm thinking, why isn't he just saying, hey, Mom, did you just show up with the guy who killed Renly? What happened with that?
Yeah. Oh, no, this is far more important.
So from there, we go to meet Jaime and Brienne, where Jaime flirts with Brienne in his own special way. And doesn't anyone understand that knights and armor and canoes aren't a good mix? But maybe the water wasn't that deep, but I'm just like,
I
all you gotta do is flip the boat, and she's drowned.
Yeah,
but, and that's free. Very true. But it was as far as
to her.
As far as my memory of what the book was, because I haven't reread it. It's been a couple of years since I last read it. I thought that it was very true to the book from my memory of it, and I got and
bless you. Are you okay? Do you need
sorry,
a drink?
Sorry.
Mom.
I thought that.
Mute button.
I thought that. Oh, God damn it! I don't know what I was gonna say.
Well,
I thought she was choking. I'm allowed to like. It was a thought.
It was true to the books, and it is. It is nice to see the chemistry there that there That's seemed to be was. In the books
yeah.
between the two of them, and it's also again this is taking place a little bit earlier than it did in the books, but I'm glad that they did, just because otherwise we might have gone all of season two without seeing Jaime at all. Mm-hmm. And I really like the actor that they've got.
Nutty.
You know,
Nutty.
Many men. I suppose not. women, horses.
Yeah, he doesn't. He doesn't know how to woo a woman.
Yeah. And we get a little bit of signs of life from Brienne too. Just you know, at the end of that scene, he's been taunting her with this idea of, "Do you think you could really take me in a fight?"
Mm-hmm.
But then the last line is her just saying, "Who knows, Kingslayer? Maybe one of these days we'll find out." And there's a little bit hint of a smile, which I think might be the first. Of all of her appearances.
I think so. And the thing, thank you for reminding me, Christiana, but I just, the whole scene, as they portrayed it on the show, to me, so perfectly encapsulated it. They showed Brienne as Brienne, just like her, and kind of stoic. And Jaime's the same way, but he's had all of that stripped away because he's been a prisoner. And seeing how the both of them have that interplay and that kind of stoic, you know, I'm this and I'm that and I'm not going to break down. And but there's just still this really great chemistry there that you were, it's just really fun to watch.
And if I may add, Jaime says there are only three men in the kingdom that might have a chance. Yeah, Brienne beat the last person who beat Jaime, which is Loras.
Right.
So from there we move on to Harrenhal. Where Tywin finds he has no choice to make but to make a move, and Hot Pie talks about hot pies, and it appears that Arya might just have a third name.
I thought it was we saw Kevin Lannister, Tywin's brother, for the first time since season one, I think.
I completely forgot who he was.
Yeah, I think if he's been there, then he was just sitting at the table with no lines because I don't remember seeing him since.
Yeah, so just the he's the guy telling Tywin what the current situation is in that scene. But it's interesting how it's another character growth moment for Arya where she realizes that she's been kind of sitting on this third name and not doing anything about it. And now, just by the coincidence of Jaqen being out on patrol when Tywin decides to leave, she's lost her opportunity now. And so she hesitated, and now that opportunity's gone, and she has to, you know, deal with that.
And something you said in the last episode where, you know, she wasn't responsible, but she, you know, should have felt a little bit, or probably is feeling it, and she's walking through the courtyard there and sees the, you know, bodies hanging there, and she definitely had more of that on her face.
But also, finally, the last name that she gives Jaqen, and I've been looking forward to that because I like the actor that they've got playing Jaqen T'Ghar, and that's such a great bit. And honestly, I like the way the show dealt with her first two names better than the book did, honestly, because I think in both cases they make it a little bit about she's not necessarily thinking of the big picture with her first two names.
Right.
And it's not until that third name that she realizes that she has to make this one count. And so at that point, she's thinking, I'm going to be left behind with the mountain now, and that's no good. And so I need to not just have one person get killed, because even if I have the mountain killed, then who else is just going to be at his place? It's not like there's a shortage of bad guys around here, so they need to get out. And that might take more than just one person being killed. And so the way she turns it on Jaqen, and also it's just cool the reveal of, you know, this is not something he's doing just kind of a lark for fun. It's like, this is a serious thing. When she gives him his name, that's like, that's a problem. That's not just like, oh, no, you can't do that. It's like, no, unname me. Me, please.
Please?
Yes. This is serious.
Jaqen
T'Ghar.
The girl gives the man his own name.
That's right.
Gods are not mocked. This is no joking thing.
I'm not joking. Man can go kill himself.
Unname me.
No.
Please.
Jaqen T'Ghar.
Exquisite.
Yeah.
Just goddamned exquisite.
Well, and one thing that was interesting is how sort of abrupt the end of this Tywin Arya relationship turned out to be.
Yeah.
And how, well, and the thing is, what I think it shows about Tywin is for all of the affection that he was, you know, kind of giving her in some ways, it was all kind of just a temporary thing, apparently, for him, because as soon as it was important, it was just, yeah, he's going to leave her behind. And he uses her as a way to sort of try to shame the mountain into not drinking too much when he's gone. And how good is that going to be for Arya if she was really going to be sticking around? It's like, oh, mountain, I'm going to tell this little girl to keep you from drinking too much. And so, clearly, by the end of that, he had sort of had fun talking with her, but by the end, he was saying, okay, now that he's moved on in his head, he really doesn't care anymore.
Mm-hmm. I want to back up real quick to when Tywin and they were in the council, and so when he left the mountain and then says, oh, and put it into those Brotherhood thing.
Mm. Oh, psst. Yeah.
And then so as a new watcher, I was like, you know, well, they mentioned that several times. I don't have a clue what it is or why they care. And, you know, if you're taking most of the army away, oh, but go track them down.
It feels kind of spoilery to talk about it because I don't know how the show's going to handle it.
No, yet. I'm not asking for what are they. I'm just saying is...
I'm
not even sure if I care.
If they cover it, I think it'll be covered.
Mm-hmm.
I think they kind of have to cover it at some point level. They have to address it.
I mean, they could... By this point, they've mentioned it enough times that it would have been good by now if they had actually shown an attack.
Yeah.
You know, even if it's like a 10-second thing, just, you know, mm-hmm. and then they cut to Tywin complaining about him or something.
This is totally not a spoiler, but a bit meta. By the way, for years, the fans of A Song of Ice and Fire have been known as the Brothers Without Banners.
Huh.
So, from here, move on to Beyond the Wall, and where Corrin hatches a plan, and Ygritte likes what she sees. So, you know, the little thing at the end, that when he's pushed down the hill, and she's just like, maybe we can get him on our side.
I don't know that there's necessarily a lot to say about this scene, but just kind of setting up that Corrin wants Jon to infiltrate, not just stay a prisoner. Mm-hmm. But there's just implication of he's going to have to prove it somehow.
Yeah. I think this scene made me stop and make a note about the number of strong female characters that are in the series. And I think that this episode is just Yara, Arya, all these, Ygritte, you know, I mean, and then later the other women, they're all, I'm not going to say all because I don't want to, I might not be thinking of someone, but I wanted to ask each of you guys what you think of, and I'm really curious about your opinion, about the weak, air quotes, the weak women. Some people might call them pussies, but we call them testicles. But so, like, who do you think is a weak female that has not been, like, strengthened through her the fire of whatever she's going through to become more than just a testicle?
I think the weakest would be Sansa. But she's definitely changed a bit and shown more of what she's made of.
So can you, like, think of a female? Can anybody think of a weak female character in the series at this point?
Like
Cersei. Cersei. Who said Cersei? Pat.
I think Cersei is strong. It's just she's motivated by her own
ego.
Ego and her own.
Lysa Arryn would be. They haven't seen much of her, but she's definitely...
I mean, she's crazy, but she's powerful.
She's not a good person. Yeah. I'm saying I wouldn't call her weak.
I think Dany's actually backslid.
Ooh.
That's true.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, I like Dany generally, but I will agree that, I mean, she has really not accomplished anything so far in the season except to get all her people killed in her dragon storm.
Yeah.
I don't tell you that she's Daenerys Targaryen, Stormborn, Mother of Dragons.
I gotta tell you, the hooker just needs to go get some moot cards and just hand them out with her picture. Here, bam, this is me. I don't have to keep repeating it.
I've actually got around and I've added extra titles. And when I say Dany's whole lines, I add on the end and the holder of the sacred rings of Beta Zed. And exactly. Thank you.
I think actually Catelyn may qualify as a weak character because she's acts stern and she says big words occasionally, but she is completely a slave to this notion of save my children, save my children. And she's not necessarily, I mean, she screwed up a lot of things. I mean, it was argued on our message boards about how she basically started the war. And if you track back part, probably not really, but definitely a big contributor to it. And she keeps being this maverick wild card who keeps flipping things around and screwing everybody else up.
She has been very impactful. She has.
I think
she's weak.
One of the strengths of not the characters, but of just the story and you know Martin's world building and the characters generally is that I don't think it's possible with any of the characters to just really summarize them as like oh strong character or weak character. I mean, because everyone's kind of got their buttons that you can press but they've all got their own motivations and they're all trying degrees of success to accomplish what they need.
Yeah, I guess I think of it more of the concept of a self-rescuing princess. She's not sitting around waiting like you see in a lot of other fantasy movies and in literature.
Santa is probably the most passive female character, but then again, from a certain perspective, I mean, what could she do? I mean, she's under guard.
Oh, she could have taken Joffrey off that bridge and ended the whole thing.
Okay.
She didn't have the stones.
And let me ask.
Literally.
I'm going to cut you.
Don't make me cut you.
Don't make me cut you.
I would say that there really aren't that many weak characters, period, full stop. Mostly, like...
Oh, honey.
Pardon me. Mostly because...
Would you like some water?
I have. It's not water.
Thank you.
Mostly because there are no two-dimensional characters in this series, and everyone is fleshed out, that the definition of weak or strong, you can argue that everyone has motivations, so therefore no one are weak characters.
Well,
and it wasn't until this episode, I might have said Roz... But then the end of this episode...
Hooker stood strong.
Yeah.
We probably need to keep...
Again, this will be a quarter of our...
Great stuff, but we want to...
You want to do questions now? We've got like 15 minutes left. What else do you want to cover? We're clearly not going to get through the
lightning
episode.
Round with the remaining scenes.
Yeah, let's
we'll skip a few scenes, and let's talk about the scene with...
Robin Talissa.
Oh, wait. No. Yeah, we'll get to
brown chicken, brown cow.
Where Tyrion and Cersei eat lamprey pie, and Roz learns it's so much better to be a big fish in a little pond than a piece of sushi in King's Landing. So
yeah, Roz has had a hard time of it in King's Landing.
Yeah.
But, it was... The one thing I didn't like it was just when she says... You gave her, you know, you should have been smarter. You gave her a Lannister Lion King necklace, her lion necklace.
Lion King.
Yeah, Lion King. that pretty much told him that it wasn't Shay.
Well, yeah, because
But then he sees it's Roz, and he's just like, you know, that relief. Like he didn't know that it wasn't Shay.
Maybe he's got a necklace for, like, every whore. Is his calling card.
Peter Dinklage played that scene really well because, you know, obviously he's very relieved, but he can't let Cersei see him be relieved. But then even on top of being relieved that it isn't Shay, he's just knowing... That also just means that Roz, this poor innocent woman who is not actually even involved at all, is now being punished for something she didn't even do. And it's all just about... You know, it's the thought that counts, right? And so even if Cersei got the wrong person, she's torturing the person that she thinks Tyrion loves, like, just to get back at him. And so he's, even though he's relieved that it's not actually Shay, he's...
Horrified.
Mad. This is not okay.
Plus, as I have said on many episodes, you don't fuck with whores. Tyrion gets best.
He does.
Oh, yeah. Because he has this little thing at the end.
I will hurt you for this. A day will come when you think you're safe and happy, and your joy will turn to ashes in your mouth. And you will know the debt is paid.
They like to make pronouncements. Like, Cersei had the one a little back, while back where it was like,
I hope you, love
I hope you find yes. love someone. I yes. hope you know love so I can take her away from you.
I wanted to, if it's okay, I'd like to comment on a scene that I thought was really cool. The scene with Bronn and Tyrion, where they, I mean, Tywin and Arya was a really big surprise, but seeing Tyrion and Bronn actually together, it made me think of like Laurel and Hardy kind of.
Yeah.
I'm hoping most of you know the reference, but like a really good comedy team, nothing sexual there, you know what I mean? It's just like a back and forth, and they're so hilarious.
It was also, you know, since we've more often seen them when they're a team against someone else,
right?
It's fun just seeing them bigger.
It was like an odd couple or something, but I think that Bronn really, the actor that plays Bronn, really stretched his legs in that scene. I mean, he really really became very compelling as a character, and I think that's my favorite little duo right
the
now.
The running gag with the Meister's name.
Do we want to go through scene by scene, or maybe we just everyone kind of just talk about?
Yeah, we got about 5 minutes to do that.
Can I just say one last thing? Yeah. The Meister's name, who wrote the book, and they're trying to figure out how to pronounce it. Yeah, Gendry, whatever. However we say these names, nobody knows how to pronounce it. Not even the characters.
Yeah.
probably my favorite scene. For the rest of the episode, was the Stannis and Davos discussion, where he says, when we take King's Landing, you're going to be my hand, and eating with a crabber, son of a crabber and son of lords, and all those lines were just were great.
He said crabber, not crapper, right?
Yeah, probably.
That was a great scene. It gave us more character depth for both Stannis and Davos in that scene. Another one that I actually really liked is the conversation, Talissa's story that she tells Rob, before she seduces him, I hope it's a very nice bridge. but just the story that she tells I thought was really interesting, just because, again, as a character who is different from anything we saw in the books, I like the story because it conveys a lot in both showing how she would not want to be in a slave city anymore, how she might feel about that sort of highborn versus lowborn politics, also why she might have gone into the medical, wanting to help the wounded sort of profession, and just creating a character that Rob would find compelling, and that we, the audience, would find compelling, because we need to be sympathetic with Rob and why he would make the decision to do that,
Who knew Westeros slaves knew CPR?
He is literally burning bridges, isn't he?
The thing for me about that scene is the note that I made was most boring romance scene ever, and then they fuck. And it was just like, I was like, oh, Jesus, come on, just kiss her or don't, come on, next scene. And then, bam, they were doing it.
Plot. the sex scene I thought was great because they both seem like, for once, they can be kids. Because they're teenagers.
Yeah. In the book, really. They're teenagers. Rob looks like 25.
And that seemed like the first time she kind of giggles and, it was really nice that they could find that together.
And maybe it's the context. I mean, it's Game of Thrones. It's not brother and sister. It's not some weird kink going on. So I guess it just kind of looked tame in comparison. I don't know.
And we wouldn't have a good episode without Joffrey being a son of a bitch, so he had his little line about the red smile and just...
Well, and it's when Stannis arrives, I'm going to ride out to meet him, and also implying he's like, the Starks are distracted, it's time to strike, and Tyrion's just going like...
They say Stannis never smiles. I'll give him a red smile.
Imagine Stannis's terror. I am trying.
We got some more Varys, which is good too. I'm always a fan of Varys. Varys is
yes.
Yeah.
He's been missed.
I love that when he joined the scene with Bronn and Tyrion. I thought that added a lot of awesome. And then later I don't think you can show Varys enough. I'm glad he's only there every once in a while in the background. It's appropriate, but love when he's in a scene.
They should be in a 60s sitcom.
And it was a great bit with Tyrion too, just where he asks something which everyone who's Read the Books has asked frequently too, which is to just for a moment go to Varys and just say, what is it that you actually want? I mean, what is it that is your actual end game here? Because it's not always clear.
That, I think that's what makes him so fascinating. Is he's one of the few characters that doesn't get that hasn't been revealed to this character.
Yeah,
to
like
this point.
Well, season one when he was talking to Ned, you know, and he serves the realm.
Yeah. That can be defined in a lot of ways.
That's
what's so great.
I mean, all the politicians are working for
us. Definition of what's best for the realm.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's what's so great about it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I know we've got to move on because we are almost out of time, but I just want to quickly say how happy I was that in the show, Lewin discovers Bran and Rickon in the crypts.
Yeah.
Because in the books, he does not know that, and that to me was such a compelling scene.
Absolutely.
And we don't need to expand on it.
It just was.
Well, I'm actually am curious just about one thing. Was there anyone here who hadn't read the books who thought that it was really Bran and Rickon that were burned?
Kind of maybe.
It's Martin. It's because you're like, it can't be, but it could
Did you think it was Bran?
Well, yeah, I mean...
No, I said in the episode. It's the kids.
Yeah, because they gave us a little bit more setup with the... Well, let's remind everyone that there's these two orphan boys. Let's mention that three or four times in the episode. And also the show hasn't really been shied away from showing violence, so you feel like if they're really going to be dead, they would have had to show it. But it is interesting just that they did try to... They did keep that suspense.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's almost fortunate for anyone who's really not sure, just because that's kind of that suspense is fun that, like, and then the relief, I'm sure, when you knew for sure, they are okay.
Okay, so we have a few questions from the audience, and the first one, I'd like to hear some answers on this. Jamie says, there are only three swordsmen who can beat me, so who do you think they are?
Well, I think
mentioned
Sir Loras Tyrell, probably Sir Barristan Selmy is one.
A young Barristan Selmy,
I'm pretty sure in the show they wouldn't have established who else it might have been, but in the books...
That's what I was thinking.
Mm-hmm. Tech, what was the third that we had decided on?
Beric Dondarrion.
Beric Dondarrion.
Oh, that's right.
And we have not seen him in the show.
Or Thoros of Mirror.
And Beric Dondarrion has been in the show. He was in season one because he is who Ned sent after the mountain. When the mountain was pillaging the Riverlands... Ned sent him after, and that was another one of the steps towards war, because the mountain was one of the Lannister men, so this idea of saying, you're going to go and get him and bring him to justice, that was kind of a slap to the Lannisters, and so Beric Dondarrion was the guy that he sent.
You think Tywin could have been one? We've never seen him fight.
Well, that's just because Jaime wouldn't fight his dad.
One-on-one combat was never Tywin's thing, though, was it?
They certainly haven't shown that at all. Yeah.
Other great fighters established by the books, though, I think they made it clear that Ned was pretty badass when he was in his prime.
Mm-hmm.
And then Howland Reed was one of Ned's friends, was supposed to be really
good. But he's dead. Yeah.
Clearly, Jamie just never heard of Cereal for
All. Well, and King Robert. I mean, he did defeat Rhaegar and Targaryen one-on-one. That's one of those.
Okay, so who do you think is the sexiest character, male and female? I would say Old Nan.
Old Nan? Oh, man. There is some backstory. Go and read The Hedge Knight. All those different short stories.
We need to read those.
There's a... Yeah.
We need to wish them.
Hodor, by the way.
Ooh. He did represent.
There's some lineage there.
He,
like Hodor.
He represented, yes. So,
it's Talissa and Jaime.
You those are your two?
Any different?
I'm thinking... you know, I don't know that it would be a lasting relationship, but Jaqen H'ghar is pretty hot.
Yes, we did mention that we were disappointed we didn't get that bathtub scene with him.
Yeah, that scene was supposed to be in a bathtub. That was a very good scene.
But I do also really like Jaime, less so with the beard. But
I like the beard.
And then it's just as far as female characters, I'm partial to the Ygritte, myself.
Yeah.
She is fast. It's just like, give me more.
I could talk about
this. Fiery redhead talking about a naked fiery redhead.
Oh, my.
I could talk about this for 3 hours, and I did on a podcast and play some fire. But, yeah, I'd have to agree with Ygritte, and I don't know. I'm going to say, though, from the series, Jorah. Not from the books, but from Game of Thrones.
Yeah. He's always posing like he's on the front of a goddamn romance novel. I can't take him seriously. He's like, yes, my queen.
My Khaleesi.
Never forget it for the rest of
Here's another question. Is Arya an awesome character or the awesomest character?
The awesomest. Anybody not agree?
By the way, there is a new saying in the immortal words of Arya Stark, shut up.
I loved in this episode just this bit where she's named Jaqen and he says, a girl is without honor. And she just kind of goes,
shrug. Best shrug ever. I actually had that in my notes. I was like, shrug. Go kill yourself, asshole. Shrug.
This one probably be a lengthy answer from multiple people, but do you think the story changes in the show are done to better align with the new books? Better align with the new books.
Do you think that, yeah.
I mean, I think most of the story changes that have done so far have been, combining characters and doing things just to make it better for TV because we couldn't do that. But
I'll answer shortly, no.
I don't know. I think that it's possible just that Martin has been involved, so I don't know that the changes are being made specifically for that reason, but my guess is that because he's involved, that there is going to be some alignment. You know, he is able at least to make sure that the changes they make are not going to really screw up anything in mind for later.
And he's said in the DVD commentary that he's loved how some of the characters have developed and the scripts and the show, and it is going to change how he writes them.
What is the episode that Georgie's writing this year?
Well, that would be tomorrow night's episode. Blackwater. That would be Blackwater.
Okay, I randomly chose a card here.
Can we have Fire and Booze as a survey for the next one, then?
Yes, Fire and Booze. Who wrote the question, is Arya an awesome character or the awesomest character?
Wait, I think you should. I think it's the very least that PG can do.
Yeah.
He owes you. Congratulations, Bruce.
Thank you for coming. For the questions we didn't get to, we will answer them on our later recording to finish up the recording. So, thanks for coming, and hope you enjoy the rest of the con.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Oh. Button and lemon cakes.
Lemon cakes. Handmade by our own Nutty.
Who wants lemon cake?
Yeah, that's great. They're delicious.
Yeah. Oh, and your new battle cry is for Beyond the Wall.
Yes.
If you'd like to send feedback to Beyond the Wall, you can email us at btw@specficmedia.com. That's btw@specficmedia.com. Or you could send us a voicemail at 704-315-5884. Or you can comment on the web. Go to specficmedia.com and there you'll find a shiny little button to click on that'll take you right to our page. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 Unported License. Feel free to share and remix. Just give us credit and don't charge money for it.
Jaime Lannister has played you for a fool. You've weakened our position. You brought discord into our camp. And you did it all behind my back.
Do you know why Varys is so dangerous?
Because he has thousands of spies in his employ. Because he knows everything we do before we do it.
Because he doesn't have a cock.
Neither do you.
We could throw books at his men.
We don't have that many books.
We don't have that many men either.
What do we have?
Pig shit.